This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Thanks so much for listening. What is governable? What is governance? This hour, some alarming examples of places where governing looks pretty dubious, and voters and citizens are voting with their feet to leave such places, or voting with their white knuckles to simply hold on. We will revisit Turkey in the wake of the terrorist attack at the airport in Istanbul. The state of Illinois we'll look at. We remember the bad old days in New York City when both the city and state were ungovernable and completely corrupt. But we begin with how those questions are dominating the future of Puerto Rico. Yesterday, the U.S. Senate passed a bill to begin to end the island's debt crisis. It puts in place a federal oversight board with broad powers, including lowering the minimum wage and selling assets. There are 8 million Puerto Ricans in the United States. Will they register their approval or dissatisfaction with this new plan in November? There's anger with their own government and also anger with the United States now overseeing the finances of this former colony, or maybe it's not a former colony. Joining us is Natasha Otero-Santiago, who is one of the leaders of South Florida's chapter of the National Puerto Rican Agenda, and Julio Ricardo Varela, his political editor for Futura Media, who says the U.S. is playing Bigfoot right now.
They've always been the colonial master, but now they've kind of doubled down. I mean, one of the things that's coming out of this is that the Promesa bill that passed, it really means that the United States has to pay attention to Puerto Rico. So in a way, it's like, okay, you've passed this. Now you have this fiscal control board that's going to pretty much dictate and govern Puerto Rico in a lot of ways. Now we're, you know, like you signed up. Now we're going to follow this. We're going to hold you accountable. We want more transparency. That's what a lot of people have told me in the last day. And it's, you know, maybe the colony is still alive. It's probably it's always been there. But now it's sort of feels like it's back to the early, you know, 20th century.
Natasha, what is a Puerto Rican voter on the island, in the colony, to use Julio's words? Maybe we should start using that now. What are they to do to express their views to this commission? And what are Puerto Ricans in the United States to do to, again, make their voices heard as this political process, difficult as it may be, unfolds?
I think that the Puerto Ricans in the diaspora have to have a commitment to raise the vote and the voice that the Puerto Ricans in the island can't. Puerto Ricans cannot vote for any congressman. They have no representation. They cannot vote for the president. And right now, the fiscal board is set up in a way that the government has no vote in the fiscal board whatsoever. So I think it's up to the diaspora to make their voices heard in the United States and be on the lookout, be on the lookout of what's happening in the island and trying to help over here as much as we can, being sure that that fiscal board, you know, is working well at what it's supposed to be doing. I don't know if you know the details, but the fiscal board can take gifts, is going to, you know, the whole thing under the fiscal board is going to cost the Puerto Rican government $370 million. They're lowering the minimum wage of youth to $4.25. So there are things that are really worrisome about this bill.
Julio, is Puerto Rico governable in this configuration? And once this is lifted, what have you got?
Sure, Puerto Rico is governable, but now what's happened is there's serious questions about Puerto Ricans voting for their elected officials, their governor. Does the governor of Puerto Rico have power now? That's a serious, serious concern. There was a lot of mixed reaction to this idea of a board. I'm not saying that people on the island are saying that the leaders and Puerto Rican government shouldn't be held accountable for this debt. That's another story, because a lot of this debt was accumulated by this very same leadership that's happened, you know, for close to 30, 40 years. But at the same time, the way it's set up, it does, you know, given Puerto Rico's historical context with the United States, it really does feel like 1912 again, where it's like, you are the bad colony. And we're going to tell you, we're going to set you straight. And I don't know if that setup works in 2016. It might have in 1912, but 2016, where the world's more global and there's more attention and colonialism just is an ugly word, I don't know if the United States can get away with it.
Natasha, as I listen to Julio, it's really heartbreaking to think that the net result of more than a century of attempting to create a sustainable political entity, Puerto Rico, with democratic values and a working economy, has just completely eroded for him to say we're back to 1912. Do you feel that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We're back on. The thing is that when Puerto Rico supposedly was given its self-government or self-determination back in 1952, and the United States went to the UN and said, we're not going to write any more reports. It's not a colony. They have a commonwealth. Everybody in Puerto Rico thought for a long time, for the last 60 years, basically, that they had some say in their government. And what's happening now is the United States and Congress is saying, no, by the way, you have always been an unincorporated territory, and we can do these things to fix your debt.
Well, with that in mind, Julio, as we look at the election, what is right. the impact that Puerto Ricans will have on the election, and what kinds of dismissive sort of, oh, let them twist in the wind sort of impulses are we going to hear from American voters?
I've always said that if this weren't 2016, and if there wasn't a general election, and if there weren't a million Puerto Rican voters in Florida and concentrated in Central Florida, and they continue to grow, there wouldn't even be a bill, because the Republicans had to do something, all because of Florida. This is pure presidential politics in action. And now Speaker Ryan can say, hey, Republicans are helping Puerto Rico. Look what we've done. So that when they go to Florida, they can say, hey, we're helping you out.
Of course, Natasha, it could also be win this state for Donald Trump, right?
No, this is what's been happening. It's because of the crisis in Puerto Rico. There has been a huge migration of Puerto Ricans, and a lot of it has been to Florida. And it's not only Central Florida, like Julito said, that Puerto Rican community was growing back in the 70s and the 80s. A lot of it has been coming to South Florida, and right. it's the brain drain that has been leaving, the professionals that have been leaving Puerto Rico with their families, have a lot of them come to South Florida. So we have grown to 300,000 Puerto Ricans in the Tri-County area of South Florida. And that is the attention that I want to bring, is those voters that are coming fresh from Puerto Rico that can vote now after 6 months of residency. Those are the voters that we need to educate and let them know, you know, you have this right. Be sure to exercise it.
Julio Ricardo Varela is political editor for Futura Media. And Natasha Otero Santiago is one of the leaders of South Florida's chapter of the National Puerto Rican Agenda. So does this bill and this very public humiliation of Puerto Rico's government have a role in the U.S. presidential election? Are Republicans and Democrats paying attention to the millions of Puerto Rican voters, many in the battleground state of Florida, as we just heard there? Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, is the issue of Puerto Rico in play in the 2016 races?
Hey, John. I mean, it is true that there's close to a million Puerto Rican voters in the swing state of Florida. If you want to know, Senator Marco Rubio, who, by the way, is unexpectedly running for re-election, and Senator Bill Nelson, Republican and Democrat in Florida, both voted for this deal last evening in the Senate. And Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand in New York, which has a lot of Puerto Rican voters and voters of Puerto Rican descent, they also voted for this. But I got to say, it is not at all apparent that simple presidential politics is what's driving this. I just don't agree with that. What's driving this is a deadline and a need to cover some and restructure some of Puerto Rico's $70 billion in overall debt, with bondholders and creditors and interests on Wall Street lining up to get paid and threatening to sue Puerto Rico for their money, John, if they don't get paid. That's really what this has been about. And as you see the opposition to this bill over the many, many 8-9 months that it's been in development on Capitol Hill, the politics against this, calling it a bailout, trying to drive Republicans away from this deal, has come from interest funded largely from debt holders, largely from hedge funds, who are the ones who want to get paid on their ownership of municipal bonds in Puerto Rico, who think that under this new program of debt restructuring and with the control board, that they're not going to get paid as fast and they're not going to get paid as much. They're the ones who don't like it.
And are they going to fuel a civics lesson about Puerto Rico that distorts the role that Puerto Ricans play in U.S. history? And will Puerto Rico end up feeling much more like a colony in the 21st century, as we were talking about, John, just a minute ago?
It's a good question. This colonial question, you're asking a guy who lives in the District of Columbia, which has experienced a congressionally mandated control board before, back in the 90s, when the finances of the District of Columbia were a mess for 15 years. We had a one-way control board also, and most of the power for decisions on fiscal matters and other policy matters were taken away from the citizens of the District of Columbia. So there is some experience with this. Now, it is, in a sense, there's no question about it, anti-democratic. It does take power away from elected officials in Puerto Rico and from voters there. And I went to John Cornyn, who's the Republican whip in the Senate. He's been for this deal and convincing many skeptical Republicans to vote for it. I said, hey, Senator Cornyn, you know, you believe in democracy. Doesn't this bother you? Listen to Cornyn.
The history of Puerto Rico in handling their fiscal affairs is pretty bad. And unfortunately, we all, as Americans, because they are Americans, will end up paying the price unless we go through this sort of process. What we don't want to have is a taxpayer bailout or a political solution which advantages some creditors over others, like we saw in the automaker bailout.
So they're going to try and do something better than the automaker bailout, which was a chaotic mess.
And from the Republican perspective, anti-capitalist, because the deal that bondholders and creditors bought into when they bought the debt on those car companies wasn't the deal on the way out. And people, you know, didn't have that predictability in the market. They said they didn't like it. Now, John, on that question of the democratic imperatives of Puerto Ricans and their government, you heard from Cornyn there saying, yeah, I don't like it, but it's such a mess that if we don't do this, a taxpayer bailout, which is worse, is what's going to happen. One of the main opponents to this on the floor for hours was Senator Bernie Sanders, who is off the campaign trail now and back in the Senate. John, I asked him about why this rubs him so much the wrong way, this new control board. Here's Sanders.
To say to the people of that country, many of whom, by the way, have served valiantly in the United States Armed Forces, died for their country, to say that we're going to allow four Republicans to run your country, to run your territory, for the indefinite future is not something the United States of America should be doing.
But they are doing it. That's what this is. I mean, is he unhinged?
No, he's not unhinged. He just didn't have the votes to try and stop it. Bernie Sanders used some long speeches along with some other members opposed to this and tried to throw some procedural wrenches into the works, John. It wasn't enough. Bernie Sanders isn't unhinged, and he's not alone. There are lots of members of Congress who agree with him. They just didn't have the votes. And I come back to the dynamic of the deadline and the crisis. $70 billion overall in debt in Puerto Rico. $2 billion of that debt comes due tomorrow. And that kind of a deadline with the threat of default on payments and creditors lining up to either get their money or file lawsuits against Puerto Rico in the Third District in New York to sue them for billions of dollars, John, has an amazing motivating effect on even wavering politicians in Washington.
Todd Zwillig, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Thanks so much, Todd.
You got it, John.